Graves at Magnolia Shore. My name is Jasper, Jazz Blackwell. The storm uncovered the dead at sunrise. Magnolia Shore was supposed to be Charleston's next luxury miracle. Private beach, glass front villas, a resort spa, and enough old money behind it to make city council smile with both hands out. Then the ocean took one hard bite out of the dune and gave back bones. I arrived while thunder still muttered offshore. Seagrass whipped in the wind. Yellow tape snapped between survey stakes. Beyond it, half buried in wet sand, lay three skulls facing the Atlantic like they had been waiting for someone to ask their names. Detective Mia Sanchez stood near the dune, boots sinking. "Developer wants them moved before noon," she said. "Moved where?" "Anywhere that doesn't delay construction." Nothing says respect like a backhoe schedule. A woman in her 60s stepped toward us, rain beating in her gray curls. Her name was Ruthie Gadsden. She carried a folder against her chest like a shield. "This land belonged to my family," she said. The construction manager, Blake Torrance, laughed from behind us. "Ma'am, this land belongs to Magnolia Shore Holdings." Ruthie looked at him. "Paper has lied before." I liked her immediately. Mia opened Ruthie's folder. Old deeds, church burial maps, a family Bible page, names written in looping ink. Gadsden Burial Ground, 1872. Blake stepped closer. "Those papers have been reviewed. No recognized cemetery exists here." I looked past him at the exposed bones. Somebody forgot to tell them. Dr. Marcus Jackson arrived in a white windbreaker and a mood as dark as the sky. He crouched by the dune, careful, reverent. "These aren't recent," he said. "Multiple individuals, mixed remains. But this," he brushed sand from a fractured wrist bone. "Trauma," Mia asked. "From the storm?" Marcus shook his head. "From violence." Blake's phone rang. He turned away, whispering hard. I caught three words. "Stop the pastor." Pressure always introduced itself before the culprit did. By midday, the county coroner's temporary tent shook in the wind. Marcus found coffin nails, buttons, a child's tooth, and a brass ring engraved with one word, Moriah. Ruthie saw it and went still. "My great-great-grandmother," she whispered. "Moriah Gadsden," Blake swore. "This proves nothing." "No," I said. "But your fear is doing a lovely job filling the gaps." He leaned in. "You don't understand what's at stake." That's what people say when money's standing too close to murder. The first threat came an hour later. A black SUV tried to run Ruthie off the marsh road. Jamal Cobra Wallace was driving behind her because I had asked him to. He clipped the SUV's rear quarter panel and sent it spinning into a ditch. When I arrived, Jamal stood over the driver, calm as Sunday morning. "Man said his brakes failed," Jamal said. I looked at the straight road. "Brakes got commitment issues." The driver refused to talk, but his phone did. One outgoing call. Blake Torrance. Mia brought Blake in. He lawyered up fast. That made him smart, not innocent. The real crack came from Lisa. My niece met me at Palmetto Ridge University's forensic lab, hair tied back, eyes bright with purpose. I cross-referenced Ruthie's deed names with probate archives. Lisa said, "The land was transferred in 1911. Sold? Stolen." She turned her laptop. A judge had declared the Gadsden heirs unlocatable while they were still living on the property. The buyer was a shell company tied to the Wexler family. Magnolia Shore's current investor? Senator Arthur Wexler. Charleston royalty. Church donor. Smiling knife. That evening, Wexler met me on the unfinished resort deck, ocean raging behind him. "Pastor Blackwell," he said, smooth and tired. "This is becoming unnecessarily inflammatory." So were those bones. His expression hardened. "You are turning an archaeological matter into a racial spectacle." "No, Senator. Spectacles are for people who want attention. Graves are for people who deserve peace." He stepped closer. "Careful, you're not in your pulpit. And you're not in a courtroom. Refreshing, isn't it?" His smile vanished. Then a bulldozer engine roared behind us. Down on the beach, one of the machines lurched toward the exposed graves. Mia shouted. Marcus ran for the tent. I sprinted across the sand. The driver ignored us. Jamal appeared from the side, climbed onto the moving bulldozer, yanked the cab door open, and dragged the man out by his collar. The machine rolled another 10 feet before dying. Marcus stood over the graves, chest heaving. "Somebody wanted this gone tonight." I looked up at Wexler. He was already leaving, but Ruthie was waiting by his car. She held up her phone. "You always were arrogant, Arthur," she said, loud enough for an old woman to record. The playback caught his voice from minutes earlier. Destroy the burial site before the injunction lands, Mia smiled. Senator, that is what we call poor phrasing. By midnight, Alessandra Moretti had an emergency injunction. Federal investigators were notified. Wexler's dynasty began bleeding in public, but Marcus found one more thing before dawn. A second layer beneath the burial ground, shallow graves, not 1872, more recent. Three migrant workers reported missing during early site clearing. Blake had hidden old crimes. Wexler had hidden older ones. Charleston had simply stacked the dead. Ruthie stood at the edge of the dune as sunrise broke through storm clouds. Will they know their names? She asked. I looked at Marcus. He nodded once. We'll try. Ruthie closed her eyes. Trying is more than they got before. The ocean rolled in, soft now, washing around the exposed roots of seagrass. Magnolia Shore would not become a resort. Not yet. Maybe never. Some land refuses to be developed because it is already occupied by memory. God doesn't bury the truth. He reveals it. I just stay long enough to witness it. This case is closed.